The Energy Department is spending $67 million in research grants it hopes will lead to the nuclear technology of tomorrow. Research projects have been selected based on potential for big breakthroughs. Pete Lyons is Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Energy at the Energy Department. He broke down the numbers and told me just how that money is being spent.
That program consists of two major components. One, and by far the largest component, is $56 million that went to U.S. universities. And then another $11 million, which was awarded at the same time, was for so-called cross-cutting technologies that I can go into more detail if you want. The university program has been going on for a number of years, and I dedicate 20% of the R&D budget in nuclear energy to U.S. universities.
All right, you mentioned cross-cutting technologies, and I guess it's a good place to begin is, what are those?
Cross-cutting technologies, at least as we define them, are technologies that don't fit conveniently under either of the two major divisions in my office, which are reactor technologies and fuel cycle technologies. There are many areas that cross-cut, thus the use of the word, both of these areas. This would include things like advanced instrumentation, advanced manufacturing, some specialty materials that can be used either from the fuel cycle or the reactor technology perspective.
And what is the goal? Is to come up with new cross-cutting technologies, and how would they be applied down the line? What are you envisioning here for the long term?
These cover a number of different areas. Let me just give you some examples. I mean, for example, one that was an award to Pacific Northwest National Lab was looking at an improved welding process, so-called friction stir welding, that could be very useful in advanced manufacturing of large components for nuclear power plants. But anything that we're doing in this area would be in the nature of R&D. It's certainly not something that has an application tomorrow or a specific competitive need. If there was such a need, we would expect industry to be paying for it directly. But under these cross-cutting R&D programs, we're trying to look at technologies that may be useful some point in the future, and they're really far enough in the future that they're beyond, if you will, the investment horizon of companies and more appropriate for an R&D perspective.
All right, and so you said some of them went to the federal nuclear labs and some of them went to the colleges and universities. Talking about the ones that went to the universities, what was your criteria for selecting recipients there?
Again, that goes back to a program we've had for a number of years. It's our so-called nuclear energy university programs. 20% of our R&D budget goes into that. Now, we have a number of different categories in which universities compete, and they will have different degrees of programmatic relevance. They range all the way from fairly large multi-university grants that are very specifically tied to a specific programmatic need that we see from an R&D standpoint that will benefit the nation in the future. That's one extreme. Another extreme is individual principal investigator grants. These would be much, much smaller, and these can have much less direct relevance to an ongoing program within my office and are more from the standpoint of trying to get new ideas and new knowledge into the field. We also have a class of grants that helps universities with major infrastructure. This could be things like outfitting a laboratory with technology that is needed in teaching a course relevant to nuclear technologies, or it could be improving the instrumentation of one of the research reactors that are operated by a number of universities around the nation.
Now, when you mentioned a programmatic need, that something that might be applicable short term, give us an example of what that might be.
Two of the largest awards we made this year, and again, we call these our integrated research programs, involve consortia of universities looking at topics that we see of particular interest. For example, we made two awards in high-temperature reactor technology using fluoride salts for cooling. The general area of high-temperature reactors is not currently used commercially in this country or any other country for that matter. It's ongoing research. It would offer some very interesting possible future applications for nuclear technologies, and we could expand the use of nuclear technologies well beyond electricity into process heat that would be of interest to many industrial concerns. The awards that were made there were both, and these are large by university standards, these are $5 million awards spread over 3 years. One of these for the molten salt cooled system is led by MIT, and it includes a number of universities. And just to give you an example of how these are structured, University of California, Berkeley, University of New Mexico, University of Wisconsin-Madison, and then companies are involved too. Westinghouse, National Labs are involved, Oak Ridge is involved in this, and there are international participants. Even though I do not fund the international participants, their respective countries support them. There's a group from the University of Cambridge, a group from the Czech Republic, and one of the institutes in China are all playing roles within this program. So this would be an example of where we see a potential real need in the country looking into the future for the application of reactors for process heat. Another class of the integrated research programs that we awarded this year, and by the way, these are all done strictly competitively. The competition is very, very severe for these awards. We had well over 500 applications for the university programs. But another class of examples or programs that we're studying would be trying to gain a better understanding of any possible degradation mechanisms of used fuel as it is stored in dry casks at most of the nuclear utilities around the country. So, for example, Penn State is leading a large program on better understanding of inspection capabilities for dry cask storage, and they're leading a large consortium. So these are at least examples, Tom, and I can certainly go into more detail on any of these if you'd like.
We're speaking with Pete Lyons. He's the Assistant Energy Secretary for Nuclear Energy. But it's safe to say that, in general, the whole program is aimed at some future state of nuclear power, as you say, not just for electricity, but for other uses from the heat that is produced by nuclear reactors.
That is very much correct. And I should note that as we look at these university programs, and I mentioned the 20% of R&D that I set aside for this, I regard this as an absolutely essential role for the U.S. government to be playing in training the future workforce that will provide the leadership in all areas of nuclear technology, and that certainly includes nuclear power, but it's not exclusive to nuclear power. Nuclear technologies are used, well, almost a case of you name it, but R&D,
sure.
Medical, environmental cleanup, many, many different beneficiaries of nuclear technologies across the country.
And you mentioned that many of these research projects are things that the industry finds beyond its current horizon. But does industry have any say, or do they have any input in areas that you choose for research because they know it's beyond something they can do right away, but they might see it long term as something helping the industry maybe in 20 or 30 years?
We welcome industry participation with any of the universities. Now, we expect these to be university-led, and the industry roles will be substantially smaller. But as I mentioned, several of the programs, and I mentioned that first one that I read on fluoride salts, we do encourage university participation in any of these where they're interested. And, for example, in some of the dry cask storage work that we're doing, companies like the Electric Power Research Institute, which is the research arm of the utility industry, or a specific company like Holtec International, are also a part of these. But the industry will be in a more minor role, whereas the goal is certainly not to fund industry. It's to encourage the university participation. As I said, creation of our next generation of leaders. But we welcome the industry involvement from the standpoint of guiding the research in ways that will make it most relevant to industry looking into the future.
And looking into the future, do you envision a time when nuclear reactor technology will be substantially different, such that we can more quickly, maybe, and with more confidence, invest in it so that the capacity and whatever requirement there is can be something much more efficient than the way it is now?
Well, there's certainly a number of approaches within the country towards trying to decrease the uncertainty involved in construction times and licensing times for nuclear power. I previously served at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, where they've instituted a new licensing regime such that one certifies a particular reactor design, and then to the extent that a utility wishes to build that precise reactor design, they do not have to recertify the safety of the reactor. We're using this process now. This is cost-shared work with industry, but we're using this process to try to advance small modular reactors as potentially a very interesting new paradigm for nuclear construction within the United States as well as abroad. And we're working towards this design certification, which essentially provides any utility with the assurance that as long as they stick to that design, they will not have licensing delays associated with consideration of a new technology.